I know the hard work that goes into putting a service together because Nancy does most of it and Janet helps as well. It doesn't always work out, and today's message that I'm going to share is not based on this passage, although we normally do that. It's more based on the hymn that we just sang. I sing the mighty power of God. So in that way, I think it's going to all fit together. But I did want to tell you that I approached five other people to share this morning, and all were unable or said no. So I'm your number six choice. I just want to put that out there. The other thing is that this has been our church for 28 years, and I've never, ever given a message. Maybe it won't happen again after today. Who knows? Anyway, I'm honored to be able to share some thoughts today, and I hope they're an encouragement to you. I was thinking about what the early church was like. People gathered together, mostly in homes. I don't think they had ministers. They were mostly hiding because it wasn't exactly a good thing to be a Christian in the early days. They just killed Christ. And so if you saw yourself as a believer, you found a time to get together with other people who hopefully wouldn't turn on you or flip, as the news is telling us about these days. And you would probably just share your story, who you were and how you came to believe. Maybe you sang. Maybe you prayed. Perhaps you shared some food together. That's what I see as the early church. And in some ways, I like that. Nothing wrong. I love having a minister. Don't get me wrong. And Daryl's awesome, as well as Laura. But I kind of think we should all be able to stand up here and share our story. So today I get to share a little bit of my story. As a retired geography teacher, I miss having a captive audience. I'm not going to lie. JP was once one of my students. And I wonder if he remembers why we have seasons. So my message today is entitled, Seasons of Faith. I won't put you on the spot, JP. I know you know the answer. But the reason we have seasons, well, does anybody want to give a quick guess? You need a clue? It's a very subtle clue. Do you see that? If I had my protractor, that would be 23.5 degrees. Because that's how much the earth is tilted. And if the earth was not tilted, your temperatures would all be related to simply where you are in relation to the equator and the pole. So we're at about 42 degrees here. So we'd kind of have spring or fall weather all year. Now you might think that'd be awesome. No cold winters, no short days, long nights. But you know the problem with that? You don't get the heat that we need for crops to grow. What grows in the fall? Nothing. And if you happen to be unlucky enough to live in the 60th parallel, it'd just be cold all the time. You wouldn't have days that are 14 hours of sunlight. So aren't we fortunate that the earth is tilted 23.5 degrees? Because if it was tilted 90 degrees, that wouldn't be good. Do you know how often the earth spins? Connor, how often does the earth go once around? How many hours does it take? 24 hours. Do you know that Jupiter, which is many, many times the size of Earth, spins once in 9 hours? Do you know there's a hurricane that's been in Jupiter for 300 years? It's called the Great Red Spot. 300-year hurricane. Can you imagine? Here a hurricane, not for us mostly, but comes and goes. In Jupiter, there's been one for 300 years. Why? Because that planet that's so big is spinning so quickly. So just while we're on rotation, how long does it take for the moon to go once around? It's sort of like my classes, usually nobody would put their hand up. About 28 days. So that means if you're on the dark side, you got 14 days of night. Like 14 24-hour periods that it's dark. And then the corollary is you've got 14 days when the sun never goes away. That's a pretty amazing thing about the moon. And it's why we always see the same face of the moon. It never changes. Just while we're on the moon, because it was mentioned in the hymn, the moon is the largest moon in comparison to the planet in our solar system. Like it's about a quarter of the size of Earth. And that's really good for us because we don't live near a tidal area, but if you do, and the Bay of Fundy is a good example, where's Gina? The tide goes in and out. It happens four times in one 24-hour period. And what it does is it allows for very rich areas of warm water and then lots of oxygen. And this is where much of life on Earth exists, in the intertidal areas. So, of course, we have water. Without water, we have no life. But the moon, if we didn't have such a large moon, we wouldn't have the tides that we do. Okay, so why am I talking about this? I'm trying to help you understand that the Earth has seasons, and so do our lives. Jesus is our example to follow. He had seasons in his life. His birth. He was born in a manger to an unwed mother. And he was born in Bethlehem, which actually fulfilled a prophecy that he would be born there. Why? Because some emperor thought he should count all his people. But it fulfilled a prophecy. And so if you ever think that the world is out of control, maybe you've heard that saying, spinning out of control. It's not. God is in control. Just as a little aside, 67 million years ago, they believe an asteroid hit the Earth and wiped out the dinosaurs. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of glad that the dinosaurs aren't still here. Jurassic Park aside, right? Like God knows. He knew that we couldn't coexist with dinosaurs. I'm glad they were here because they're pretty amazing, but I'm glad they're not here now. In Jesus' youth, he got in trouble. Of course, he got in trouble for spending too much time in the temple. And he got in trouble because he didn't tell his parents where he was going. Now, it's important that I be a little autobiographical here, and I got in trouble a bit as a child. I know that's a shock to some of you. Rick, that's not funny. You're not supposed to laugh here. Rick probably got in trouble too. Yeah, he did. So Jesus had a childhood like many of us, learning to figure things out. Doesn't say a lot about his young adulthood. You know, did he apprentice with his father Joseph as a carpenter? We really don't know. But I'm sure he learned as he watched. If nothing else, he had an appreciation for working with one's hands. And I, as a teacher, those of you that were teachers, sometimes you don't really see the results of what you do. You know, how often did I have anybody come back and say, hey, you made a difference? It's happened a couple of times. Some of my former students are sitting in the congregation. So I like to think that something I said or did made a difference. But if you build something, if you build houses, you can say, I built that house. If you did masonry like Martin, I made that wall. It's still up there. It's going to be up there after I'm gone. It's such a great thing to build. And I'm going to talk about gardening in a little bit as well, because, you know, when you weed and plant and water, you can see results of your work. And you know what happens if you don't do all those things? It's called the jungle. Nature takes over. And if you've ever seen a house that's not lived in, nature takes over. Doesn't take very long. So let's look at Jesus' adulthood. He gathered friends around him. Nancy was talking the other day about, I heard somewhere, I can't remember where, that maybe they were teenagers, most of the disciples. It's possible. We don't really know. Peter, Simon, Andrew, James, John, you know what some of them did, fishermen and bunch of different things, but maybe they were pretty young. It's possible. He went to weddings. Who's been to a wedding this summer? Who's been to two weddings? Who's going to go to a third wedding? Oh, they can be great. They can be stressful, but hey, it's an opportunity to celebrate. And he did his first miracle at a wedding. And, you know, I can just imagine that conversation. His mother says, Jesus, I need you to change some water into wine because they've run out. How did that conversation go? He said to her, Mother, it's not my time yet. So he dug in a little bit. But as we know, as recorded in the Bible, he did change that water into some of the best wine that anybody had ever had. And the comment was, why didn't you save the cheap wine for, I can't remember, I'm getting it all mixed up here, but basically they're saying you're wasting the good wine now. You should save it. Or I can't remember. I'm getting that wrong, so my apologies to that. But anyway, he changed water into wine. He traveled around the countryside preaching, teaching, and healing. He spent time alone. So if you ever kind of think it's wrong to spend time alone, it's not. Jesus is our example. And in Mark it says he went out to a quiet place to pray. And you know, he didn't heal everybody. He didn't talk to everybody. He didn't touch everybody. So I kind of take some license from the fact that Jesus didn't fix everything. Now, in the ultimate sense, he does fix everything because he is there for us at all times. But when he was alive, sometimes there was a whole crowd there and he just said, tell the disciples to get me a boat. I'm out of here. I like that. I really like that. And if you're in ministry of any kind, you need to take time to recharge your batteries, or you don't have time or energy for what God wants you to do. So again, it comes back to seasons. He wept at the death of his friend Lazarus. He had other close friends who were not disciples. Mary, Martha, Nicodemus. He had times of fasting and feasting. He was accused of being a person who lived an inappropriate life. Why? Because he hung out with undesirable people. Women, for one. Even though you're 50% of the population, you were definitely second-class citizens in the Bible times that are recorded. Jesus went up to a woman at a well who was clearly not even acceptable by her female peers. And he engaged her in conversation. He is one of the best examples. He's the first feminist in recorded history, I truly believe. So if you feel like it's a man's world, and in some ways it has been for a long, long time, Jesus is your champion. And so now we come to near the end of his life, his last season, death. He faced it. But he did say this, Father, if you can take this cup from me. He didn't want to face death as he faced it. But in the end he said, not my will, but yours. Not my will, but yours. He asked his disciples to be with him in his most difficult hour. What happened? They fell asleep. He says, could you not stay awake but for 1 hour? And don't get me wrong, I would have fallen asleep or not gone. But then his final season, which is still in place today, resurrection, he was raised from the dead, showing that death had no power over him, nor does it have power over us. He's recorded as saying, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will never die. What a great hope that is. Isn't that a wonderful hope? So what are the seasons of our lives? One thing we know for sure, today is all we have. Life can be taken from us at any moment. And as you know, we've been dealing with a family situation of an accident earlier this summer, and it's a reminder that life can change in an instant. Just a few examples about my own life, just so you can relate, I guess. I was born in London, Ontario. Nice house, quiet street, two older brothers, stable family, parents who were together for my whole life. I had food, clothing, and shelter. I was lucky enough to be born in Canada, like many of you. And our friend Sam from Nigeria, we know that life is not always calm and peaceful everywhere. And he's here for a reason. We're glad he's here. As a youth, as I said earlier, I was a bit of a troublemaker, being the youngest child. I went to Cubs and Scouts. Akela is the Cub person in charge. She once said, I feel sorry for your mother. That's a very hurtful thing to say. And I'm 60, and that happened when I was 8, and I still remember it. Words are powerful. I had an Aunt Muriel who never married, the oldest of 5 sisters, my mother being the 2nd oldest. I did a few things in church that really got me in trouble with her. Just being a kid, but you never put shame on the family. Ever. Ever. And if you do, you will hear about it. I heard about it. I went to Camp Hermosa, which has been a great place. That's where I met Nancy. And it's been a great place for our family and for our extended family, Tracy and Doug and the kids. When I was in grade 9, I got to live in New Zealand and Australia. I was upside down for a year. Pretty awesome. My dad was a professor. He took a sabbatical and went to meet people he had met in Cambridge in the early 50s. That's a good and a bad thing because grade 9 is an important year. Grade 9 is when you say goodbye to some of your old friends and you make new friends. If you're not around for that year, you're the new kid. You come back and your old friends have new friends and you don't have any friends. That changed who I was. I had to figure out how to find new friends. I like to think I'm a friendly person, so I guess it turned out okay, but I definitely had some difficult times because of that. But I got to live in a beautiful part of the world. It's amazing. I would love to go back there. Camp Hermosa was important for me in my teens, and it is where I made my faith commitment. First as a 9-year-old, and then I recommitted myself as a 15-year-old. That's really where I trace my faith journey back to. accepting that Christ died for me that I might live. It's been a great journey. In adulthood, I went to university, went to teacher's college, got my first job in Elliott Lake, dating, my first car, a Dodge Aries. Remember those cars? And I reconnected with Nancy after having known her for about 8 years. Children, two of which are here in church today. Tracy came to live with us when we lived in Port Dover. Life has never been the same since that happened. In so many amazing ways. If Tracy hadn't come to live with us, she wouldn't have met Doug, who lived in Simcoe. And if they hadn't got together, we wouldn't have Connor and Isabel. So it's pretty awesome to think about that. Norfolk County, Colin came, and Tim came to visit yesterday. And as we drove through the countryside, he said, I love Norfolk County at this time of year. The corn, the beans, everything is just ready to be harvested. Isn't it beautiful? We're so fortunate. I'm now in what's called semi-retirement. I've had a loss of my father, Nancy's, both her parents, and I'm watching my mother age, I wrote somewhat gracefully. She's 95, lost her glasses this week, so that's a new chapter that we'll have to deal with. I like to think that I have a saying that this is what I would like, this is how I live my life, and this is what I tell other people. Make the world a better place because you were in it. Make the world a better place because you were in it. Doesn't matter where you are, what situation you're in, make it better because you're in it. How does Deborah Ellis do it? She travels, writes books, speaks to people one-on-one, makes movies. Why? Because she's been given a unique perspective on the world and its inhabitants. And she wants to make it a better place. By the way, she's one of the people I asked to speak today. Obviously, she's not here. John and Janet recently celebrated 25 years of marriage. We were unable to attend the gathering because we were at a wedding. But it was great to know that they were marking the occasion with friends, family, and food. Rice Krispie squares for Janet and apple pie for John. What are the many ways that they have made the world a better place? Teaching, coaching, conducting, directing, parenting, Katie and Julia, Isabella, camping, telling stories, taking care of parents, being brother and a sister, traveling. Can you imagine our church, our community, without John and Janet? I can't, nor do I want to. Can you imagine what this church would be like with every person who's in here? I get to look at all of you right now. It's pretty awesome. Over the years, and it's now 27 years, I guess, that I've been the music director. It's not even close to Helen Matthews, 45 or some crazy number, so I'm not going to try to match that record. But I think about, you know, these are the people that I probably know the best in the church. You know, Shirley, what she's gone through this year, she's not here today. Barb's not here. She's going to church with Mike at Norview. Marianne, I don't know where she is, but she's here somewhere. Don't we have laughs with Marianne? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. You know, Rick and deacons and choir and Ruth Haviland, who her health is keeping her from being here. of course, just everybody. I can't say everyone, but I do want to spend a little bit of time on John. Jack, some of you call him. I don't call him Jack. He's my cousin. He's my second cousin because our grandparents were siblings. That's pretty cool. I'd like to focus on him just for a moment because of all he does for others with his service work through Rotary, fundraising, through things like Operation Eyesight, numerous trips to China, over 30. But most of all, it's his garden. With the young people, we've done these geranium fundraisers where we figure out how to plant and grow geraniums that we've cut off other geranium plants. And then with Floyd's help, they keep watered and a greenhouse, which is the choir room. So I really appreciate that somebody, when they built that addition, gave us such a beautiful choir room with big windows and southern exposure, all the things that plants need in the winter. Remember to go back to seasons? How do you keep growing when it's minus 20? You put glass windows up and you let the sun stream in. John is often bringing flowers from his garden for people like Wendy and other occasions when we have banquets and there's fresh flowers on each table. Now, have you been to John's place? Have you been a young person or a parent of a young person who's helped him garden? Okay, that's a lot of work. And I do not envy the property, but I know when Tracy and Doug got married, we had pictures there, and it is so beautiful. And it's just minutes from downtown. My Aunt Muriel was born there with her sister. Her mother's sister was with her mother at the time. I think about Richard Durant and all the gardening that he did and the visiting that he did. There's a person that should still be with us. So what can we learn from gardening? First of all, like I said earlier, if you don't have some human intervention, it's just a jungle. I remember my grandmother. My grandparents lived in Park Hill, and they had a big garden. And my grandmother used to send me out to thin the carrots. That was not a fun job. Why do you thin carrots? Because you don't want 100 little ones. You want 30 big ones. So you have to take out some so that some others can grow. It's not fun because you're out in the heat of the day and you're not ever going to probably experience the end result. Sort of like picking black currants, which is my other least favorite thing to do. First of all, I don't like them. Second of all, it takes half an hour to pick a little bowl. Anyway, that's a tangent, so I'll come back. But gardening is an amazing thing. I have a friend who, Rod, who's a mechanic and lives up in Mount Forest, and we've driven in, I'd say, late March. He says, this is one of my favorite times of the year because all the fields are ready. Ready for whatever's going to happen. It hasn't happened yet, but they're ready. He loves that. And so, you know, whether you have a garden yourself or, you know, do a community garden, first of all, you have to get the soil ready. And then if you want, you can plant the seeds or little plants. And then you have to take care of them. You have to weed because the weeds will take away from the nourishment for the plant. I've figured out that mulch is a big help to me because if you mulch things, you don't have to weed as much. And it looks nice. And when it rains, they keep the moisture. Over the years, it's taken a lot of time. And so, as we go back to the theme of what I'm sharing today, seasons of faith. Each of us has a time when we were born. Each of us has a time when we come to understand what life is about. Life in our family, life in our community, at school, how you fit in. And then an opportunity to say, do I want a life of faith? Do I want to give my life, give my heart to somebody who gave their life for me. And if you say yes to that, then everything else follows. And wherever your journey of faith takes you, whether it be to get married or not, whether it be to have children or not, whether you have siblings or not, and how you live your life. Do you open up your home to others? Do you share food? Do you give money to a stranger? How do you live your life? Because let's go back to my saying of life. Make the world a better place. Because you were in it. Jesus was a great teacher. And the best lessons are stories. Because we remember stories. He told a story about the parable of the sower. And I'd like to share that. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Sorry about this. My family knows I'm a crier, so can't read. Such great crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat there while the whole crowd stood on the beach. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, "Listen, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground where they did not have much soil. They sprang up quickly since they had no depth of soil, but when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen." So that's the other great thing about a parable. It's not pounding you over the head. It's letting you figure it out. Whatever the message is for you. So, you know, are you the sower? Are you one of those kinds of seeds? And where are you planted? And are you growing? There's so many things from that. And then the other one I wanted to read is from one of the letters. And earlier we read the Ephesians section, which was Paul. Obviously, he was in chains and in jail. I'm not. You are not. But this is a great thing because, again, I think that it's important to remember that not everybody has to do everything. And so this is what Paul says. "What then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you came to believe as the Lord assigned to each." Now here's the important part. "I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. The one who plants and the one who waters have a common purpose, and each will receive wages according to the labor of each. For we are God's servants, working together. You are God's field, God's building." So to recap, we live in an amazing world that's tilted. So if you ever think just be upright, no. The reason it works is because it's tilted. So if people think you're tilted, just say thank you. That's what makes life worth living. Not being perfect. God never asked us to be perfect. And the Christian church has gone a long way down a wrong path thinking we're supposed to be perfect. We are forgiven. We are only perfect in that Christ is in us. That is it. And there's a freedom in that. We can ask forgiveness from other people, from God. So there's lesson one. Don't be afraid to be tilted. Not too much. 23.5 degrees is enough. It's just the right amount of tilt. Secondly, accept the seasons of life. I turned 60 this year, so that's some kind of a milestone, I guess. I'm entering this final third of my life. And I'm okay with that. I'm pretty happy with the first two thirds. And we'll see what the next third brings, however long it is. And whether you're dealing with children, grandchildren, illness, stresses. Well, this is one of my other favorite sayings. I might not be up here for 26 more years, so here's my other saying. No stress, you're dead. I did want to share this. Isabel's not here, but we went camping at Pinehurst, and we watched the movie that night. It was Mrs. Doubtfire, which was great. And I just looked up at the perfect time, and I thought, what is that really bright light going across the sky? It was the space station. I looked up at the perfect time, and if you've ever seen it, it takes about 3 minutes to go across the sky, and it's about three times as bright as Venus, and it doesn't flash. There's no flashing lights. Planes have flashing lights. Do you know that in the space station, well, you do know this, I'm sure, there's no gravity. And you might think, hey, that's a good thing. But you know what? If you have no gravity, you start to lose your muscle mass. And they have to work hard to keep their muscle mass. So the one great thing about gravity is the fact that we have to work hard to keep upright and keep our head from flopping over. It keeps us strong. So why am I saying that? Because no stress, you're dead. That's the only time you will have no stress. So just accept that it is a part of life. You can either be angry about it or accept it and use it to make you a better person. So thank you for listening to my thoughts today. Make the world a better place because you were in it.